Hey, welcome to... Dude, don't put the ice... You always put the ice near the microphone, dude. And everyone's like, why the fuck is there always ice jingling?
It makes people thirsty.
Hey, welcome to the Film Podcast. I'm Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Brandon.
Adam Scott.
I'm Kevin.
There you go.
Hey.
The whole band's back together. And today we're talking about, it's a sad topic, but I think we're going to have fun with it.
It's a celebration.
Yeah, it's a celebration, bitch. I remember to turn my phone off. Sorry, you guys.
Oh, I get shit for my drink, and you don't get shit for your phone?
Here's the thing. I feel ashamed because it's not like the phone, they just invented cell phones, where you're like, I just got this, dude. It's 1981. Sorry, dude. It's literally been like 30 years since the cell phone was invented. I feel ashamed.
30 years? Really?
You are jumping way around on the page. 1981, 30 years.
How many years has it been?
Since people generally had cell phones, like for public use? Like,
what year was Lethal Weapon?
20? All right.
What year was Lethal Weapon?
87. The first one?
Yeah.
87, 89, something like that, yeah.
There's a cell phone in
there. So almost 30 years. And 5 years,
but I mean general
public.
Yeah.
Like when you would have been able to.
My dad had a cell phone.
Wait, 25 years.
My dad had the same cell phone that Murtaugh uses in Lethal Weapon. That's why Murtaugh is always reminded of
it. It wasn't a car phone?
No, it's like it was the big bag where it looks like a field phone.
My rich friend at school, his mom had a big bag cell phone. I remember that. Yeah, it was like a separate purse that you.
Wow.
But it looked just like a car phone.
All right. So
welcome to the Film Podcast.
Yeah, we're talking about cell phones. Sorry. So today's a celebration. It's about a celebration of Robin Williams' career. Right, we're gonna turn the frowns upside down, right?
Like he did frequently.
Like he did, yeah. So there's no list today. We're just gonna kind of talk. We'll go like around and just we'll bring up any topic, any movie, any role, any cameo, any voiceover, anything goes. Commercials. I'm sure he did commercials, right?
He did.
Nintendo.
And really?
Snickers. Oh yeah.
Snickers.
He loved Nintendo. Yeah,
he did. He was a big gamer. His daughter's name is Zelda.
Yeah. It's his favorite game.
And his son, what's his son's name?
I don't remember.
Cody.
He has two sons.
One's named Cody.
Cody.
And one's name...
Isn't it Chris?
Something like that. They didn't seem like names from games to me.
Hmm.
Sorry.
Rory would know.
He's like obsessed with Zelda Williams.
And today, you know what we're going to do? I'm gonna give myself a note to put the Snickers commercial on the episode.
You should make notes for a lot of things we're gonna talk about.
All right, I'm pulling up a page for my notes. All right, so Jenny, why don't you start us off? Name one movie that you fucking loved, or role anything.
I'll name the one that I just watched yesterday.
Do it.
Or 2 days ago.
Do
Dead Poets Society.
For the first time.
Yeah, I'm surprised I had never seen that movie before.
Captain, my captain.
Yeah.
Yep.
So a little thing about the Blu-ray and DVD. Apparently, there's scenes that are not in the Blu-ray and DVD that are on the Laserdisc. So
what are those?
I don't know exactly which ones. It listed them on the website, but I don't know them.
Deleted scenes?
Yeah. Well, scenes that got cut. I don't know why. I think the Laserdisc is the director's cut. But everyone seems to like that edition better. So, anyway.
Oh. Who directed Dead Poets Society?
Peter Weir.
That's what I was going to say. Okay,
yeah,
Peter Weir.
Yeah. So, Dead Poets Society, first time for you.
Mm-hmm.
What were you expecting to see from
not,
a movie called Dead Poets Society?
Not a suicide. Was not expecting a suicide.
Seriously. It's like
never would have guessed that. Completely thought it was going to be like, what is that, what's-her-face movie, Dangerous Minds? I thought it was going to be like another Dangerous Minds.
Yeah, like a prep
Dangerous
school,
Minds.
Dangerous Minds.
And a New England prep school.
Yeah.
with Coolio.
Like shitty kids that don't want to learn.
Well,
he changes the ways.
Yeah, like,
but their parents are paying a lot of money for them to go.
Yeah. And what is it, Clarence Vonnegut? What is his name? Vonnegut?
Boddicker?
Kurt Vonnegut or Clarence Boddicker?
Kurtwood Smith.
Yeah. Kurtwood Smith. Have you noticed that Kurtwood Smith played the dad of the...
Kurtwood.
Sorry.
No,
Kurtwood.
Is that Kirkwood?
No,
like, what you said to me was very Kurt.
Oh, man. I've been saying it wrong for at least 15 years. Man, am I red-faced.
It's been a while since you got it right.
Yeah. Well, Kurtwood Smith plays the dad of the kid who commits suicide.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's from that 70s show. He's looked the same for like 30 years.
He plays a really good that character.
Yeah.
Dick.
Like, Dick.
Yeah.
A really
Dick
good
Dick. Dad.
Yeah.
Dick Dad.
So it was cool to see. I also rewatched it. It's playing on, I think, HBO Go.
No, really?
Really? I think so. Oh, it's on one of those channels.
Did you pay to watch it?
No. It's not on HBO Go. It's definitely not on HBO Go. It's on something else.
Then it's on Showtime because on my DVR.
Did no one? Am I the only one who watched this literally 7 times throughout school?
Dead Poets Society?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I watch it all the time.
Yeah, okay.
In
I didn't know
class?
If that was a regional thing. Oh, yeah. Like several classes, like probably twice in elementary school, like again, middle, and a couple times in high school.
In the school you watched Dead Poets Society?
Yeah, for English classes. Like it was big that they would show Dead Poets Society.
But don't they show boobs?
I can't remember. Do they show boobs?
In that little pullout that he brings.
Oh, in the magazine?
The magazine.
Oh,
they
yeah,
show
probably.
Boobs.
But so
they don't show kid dead, I guess.
Well, Titanic, they show
it's
boobs.
It's PG, though. That's what I'm trying to figure out. It's PG.
Titanic, they show her boobs, and it's PG.
Titanic is
PG? PG-13. Yeah. PG-13.
Well, same thing, though. It's not R, and you could see luscious boobies. You know? Yeah.
PG-13's harder to get teachers to agree to watch in
listen,
class,
guys, I don't know why you're focusing on the tits in the movie that rather than the message and
I just
felt
think
emotion
it's crazy.
Within it.
Yeah. That's all. Okay,
Let's so talk more I feel like school, I feel like high school teachers played it so you would have that like respect for them, but no,
they all want to be him. Yeah,
they wanted to be him.
What's I can't remember his character's name. Keating,
Captain.
Yeah, Keating.
John Keating.
Yeah.
John Keating. That's right.
Captain.
He even sounds like a poet.
I love. It's really cool to see like a young Ethan Hawke. It's cool to see, I'm going to do a Ethan
Robert
Hawke.
Sean Leonard.
Yeah. Robert Sean Leonard looks exactly the same.
Yeah,
he
looks
exactly the same.
Taller.
Yeah.
Like he just looks taller. That's it.
Yeah. Who else is in that? That's famous.
Josh Charles.
Yeah. Man, it's such a good movie.
It's so good.
And who plays the like headmaster of the school? Ah, damn it. Dead Poets Society.
What's
I'm looking
his,
it up. I don't remember.
Is it Mr. Nolan?
Yes. Yes.
Norman Lloyd.
He's such a dick. but yeah, this was another like serious role for Robin Williams. Yet he still there's always some funny elements to his performances. I fucking loved it, man. He's so great in this. I can't believe that's so cool that you finally saw it.
Yeah, I can't believe I hadn't seen it. I thought I had.
Did you say you saw it before you went to work? And
yeah.
You were crying?
Yeah. I was like, this wasn't the right one movie to watch before work.
Milk was a bad choice. man, yeah. This was, what is it, 1989. And, man, all these actors, look at all these actors. They're so fucking young. The end scene is definitely like, oh, man. Not even the suicide, just the end when
they're all standing on the desks.
Well,
yeah.
And that look in Ethan Hawke's face right before he does it, like,
yeah.
Like, you could see the wheels turning. You see, like, that decision, like, do I do it? And he's, like, looking down, and, oh, man, so emotional.
But it's, like, the perfect... So, rewatching a bunch of Robin Williams performances, one of the through lines of many is that it's such a perfect blend. So many comic actors become known for, like, a specific thing, like a shtick, you know, like Jim Carrey, you know, rubber face, all that kind of stuff. But like he, for some reason, like the roles he had, the stuff he did was the perfect blend of being able to like be himself, like while filling a specific, like dramatic role.
Yeah.
It's like the character was imbued with his, like his essence.
Like he's like the characters, and they're not at all, but it's like the character, it just, when he performs them, it feels like the characters are half based on him all the time.
Yeah. He brings them to life.
Yeah, but really, and not in a way that like reads from a mile away like other performances like that.
Yeah.
But like just the, like when he's just, because it, like everyone around him gets the ability to just like let loose around him.
Yeah.
Like the scene when he first comes in and he's having him tear out, you know, the pages of the book and everything. God, it's just so good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do feel like teachers showed it in retrospect to be like, oh, this is going to give them the passion for the shit that I'm going to show them.
Yeah, and they're gonna call me the captain. You know? Yeah. And now,
oh man, never. After we watch this, they're going to love Where the Red Fern Grows.
And they're going to be getting on top of their desks. Yeah. But I feel like that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. Some kid falls off his desk.
Because those desks are like front heavy. So
they
if you stand on one, like you're just going forward.
Oh yeah. You're gonna take a subway ride to No Teeth Land.
yep.
Could not have said it better myself. And wouldn't.
So this was... How old is Ron Williams at this point? He's still really young. Did you guys know?
No, he's like 30. I mean,
I'm considering.
He's like 35, yeah. Probably.
Did least. You guys know? Little trivia on this movie: Liam Neeson was originally supposed to be that part as Mr. Keating.
That would have been a way different movie.
No kid would have loved it then.
He was 38.
38. I have a certain set of skills.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was teaching children.
Yeah.
Because he didn't do Morgan Mindy until he was like 28 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot later.
But yeah. I'd like to see a multiverse where we could see that performance of Liam Neeson. he would go nuts at the end, just fucking start shooting people up.
But I just feel like instead of the joyous, like going back, like the page ripping scene, instead of kids joyously ripping out pages, like yearning for like the real stuff of life, it would be all out of fear.
Yeah.
Okay, I will rip the pages out.
Yeah, it wouldn't be fun.
No.
It'd be a task. All right, that's a good way to start us off. It's start us off strong. Movie,
but the Carpe Diem when he's showing him the old students at the school.
I feel like after this, everyone wanted to start like a Dead Poets Society in high school. Like when you watch it, and you're like, don't be a douchebag. We're not going to start that, dude. we're not young Ethan Hawke, okay? So chill the fuck out. All right, Brandon, you want to give us a pick?
Here's one I. Yeah, might as well. Okay, The Fisher King.
Nice.
It seems like something we'd say for last because I think it's probably his best thing. I think it's probably the best he ever was.
Really?
Yeah, for me, I don't know.
That's Terry Gilliam.
Right? Terry Gilliam.
What year is this?
This is 1990? 1991.
And it starts a very undued... it's
literally
pretty
dude. Was like, that's got to be Val Kilmer. That is not Jeff Bridges. That's Val Kilmer.
He does kind of look like Val Kilmer. Yeah.
It's like, there's no way that's
young
him.
Jeff Bridges.
Like a skinny Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
Now he's a little chubby, but
I mean, Val Kilmer just did a really good job of evoking Howard Stern.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He did actually. Like the opening scenes in the radio.
Well, yeah, because then it's like all in like silhouette. Like you never actually see all of his face until he's out of the studio, and he totally looks like Howard.
And it's the really like Gilliam-esque setup of the studio where there's so much empty space around him.
And it's like, it's just the camera moving around him. And I started to watch it, but yeah, I do love it, but I was like, I need to watch something I hadn't watched. But yeah, just Williams being fucking awesome.
Being basically like Lancelot.
Yeah.
Like, cause it's all a Grail thing, mm-hmm. In the weirdo Terry Gilliam way. But there's one where he is manic, like literally he's playing an insane person, like a person who has lost his mind, mm-hmm. but then has these like moments of pure lucidity. Like the scene, like the one that just floored me was the scene when he's on the doorstep with Amanda Plummer, like after they do the date, with her, like the woman that he basically is stalking at the beginning of the movie.
And tells her at that moment that he's been stalking her.
Yeah, but the way, but it's so, like, they have this connection in that moment, and, like, the way he's telling her after she has just given him, like, their entire relationship, you know, where, you know, he basically, I'm butchering the line where he's like, well, yeah, of course you're tired. You just lived a relationship in 30 seconds. But just him, he has that, it kills me every time that like starting to cry, like squinty eyed smile, like that he does all the time, and it just kills you.
By the way, I'll name every time we name a movie, I'll tell you where it's playing. Dead Poets Society is playing on Showtime on demand, so if you want to watch that, Fisher King is playing. It's streaming on Netflix
right now.
So, yeah. But yeah, man, this I hadn't seen until recently, actually.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it in a long time, probably since 93 or something like that.
Yeah, this is, is it me or is there clearly, like, Jeff Bridges' performances are pre-dude and post-dude. Like, post-dude, it's all dude. Like, it's all Big Lebowski. I don't know if he started smoking pot at that point, but it's very mellow. And pre-Lebowski... They were more intense, his performances. I don't know if that's...
I agree.
Right?
Like, he was definitely more intense than I've ever seen him, I feel like.
I think so. I think he took up the mantle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's... I would also argue that as one gets older, one slows down.
Yes. It's true.
So. Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Al Pacino's still yelling, dude.
Yeah,
he's yelling all his lines.
It's slower.
No, he's just stuck in his Al Pacino mode.
Yeah.
It's not that he's yelling, it's just that's all he knows how to do now.
I feel like Al Pacino's becoming Phil Spector. The crazy hair.
Yeah, he just there's no nuance in Al Pacino.
Yeah. But again, Fisher King from 1991. Yeah, it's good. It's on Netflix. You should watch it. Jeff Bridges. Oh, man.
And Robin Williams.
Robin Williams.
I love the scene, or I loved the scene where they were in the Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
The Chinese food.
Are you worried you're saying something offensive by Nick calling it a Chinese restaurant? It is a Chinese restaurant.
Okay, good. Sweet. I sounded more anyways. So when they're in there and they're like... going through that whole montage of the whole entire dinner where he's moving this and she's moving that and then they have to fight over find the broccoli and then the dumpling and blah, blah, blah. And then all you see is the two... What's the girl's name?
Amanda Plummer?
No. Jeff Bridges and...
Mercedes Rule. Yeah.
When they're just, like, cracking up behind them and you can tell, like, this is obviously making them laugh in real life. That was the best. It was so funny.
That is a great moment. And the scene, I love the scene when he takes Jeff Bridges to the train station. And there is probably my favorite Tom Waits performance as one of the other homeless men. But there's a scene where it's all like the hustle and bustle. It's when he's following like Amanda Plummer. Like we see how he like kind of tracks her through the day. But it's like the hustle and bustle of Union Station. And then everyone starts dancing together as he is following her through the crowd of dancing people. Like that is such a beautiful moment.
And then all of a sudden they just like...
Yeah, all of a sudden off. Like he loses her and everyone goes back to, you know, the rat race.
So good.
Yeah, really good. I really need to finish rewatching it.
And for the people who haven't seen this movie, the movie is about a radio DJ who... because of his actions, a listener commits suicide, and then it's kind of...
He murders...
Yeah.
He murders someone, sorry.
Yeah. He goes into a restaurant.
Killing spree.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, he goes... there's this diatribe against yuppies and stuff like that, and so this guy that calls him his radio show all the time goes and, like, kills a whole bunch of people indiscriminately in a restaurant, one of those people being Robin Williams' wife.
That's right.
And that kind of makes him snap.
And it's a lot of that relationship between Robin Williams and the DJ, played by... the dude.
Yeah. But Robin, it's just really cool because Robin Williams plays this professor whose like focus is Grail mythology, like the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
So his obsession becomes finding the Holy Grail, which he sees as this thing that is sitting in this rich guy's like apartment, but like it looks like a castle, you know. So that's what he's seeking, you know, the Grail. And like Jeff Bridges, I don't know Grail mythology well enough to know who Jeff Bridges is in the whole thing. But knowing Gilliam, I know it's all mapped out to a T.
And where did this is an interesting movie for Terry Gilliam. Like, I don't know, this seems
this a is like offbeat. This has to be the first thing. This is like the big studio thing he ever did.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be the first thing he did for a major studio. But that still just reeks of Terry Gilliam. That didn't have, you know.
Yeah, I guess so. Brazil wasn't a big studio movie, no, right? It was more independent.
Well, I mean, when they took it away from him, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then this was just before Munchausen, right? This was after Munchausen. Yeah. Okay.
It was Fisher King.
Munchausen is 89?
88.
Okay.
And then this is 91, then 12 Monkeys is 95.
That's right.
So, but good performance.
Another great little, just while we're on Terry Gilliam, another great little Robin Williams performance.
Yeah,
Baron Munchausen.
King of the Moon and Baron Munchausen.
Yeah.
So good.
Playing a lunatic.
Two completely different characters.
Yeah.
And also starring in The Fisher King, Harry Shearer, isn't it?
Michael Jeter.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of my favorite scenes in that movie when he does the singing telegram. At her office.
Oh, as like Ethel Merman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he is so good.
Uncle Jeter's...
I forgot about that.
Such a great character actor.
He really is. Especially in that. I'd never heard him sing like Ethel Merman before.
Yeah. God, that was good.
Every time I watch his scene in Open Range, when he's reading the letter that Kevin Costner left.
Oh, yeah.
No matter where I'm at, I'm like, don't get teary. Not now. Not here, not now. All right. Adam, you want to throw out a movie? Or a performance.
Oh my goodness! I don't even know where to start.
Whoa! Dude.
Sorry, guys.
Calm down. I'll figure it out. I'm gonna go.
There's no wrong answer.
I know. I don't. Okay, I'm gonna go with the survivors then, which is the one that none of you have seen, I believe.
Nope. No, that's correct.
But it is on Hulu.
God, you could have at least gone with Club Paradise.
Oh, it's on Hulu.
Survivors is better. You haven't seen it.
I haven't. I've
so you don't Paradise. Even know. It's better than Club Paradise because Walter Matthau's in it too. And Walter Matthau and Robin Williams together is amazing.
Oh, man, what year is this? Sound amazing.
83.
Okay.
It's on Hulu right now.
So this has got to be his third movie?
If you have Hulu,
83?
Because sure. Was it yeah. Popeye Garp and then
Popeye Garp and
has
then
to
this.
Be this right
mm-hmm. Yeah actually well see now you may make me want to talk about something between Garp and this that is not a movie him as the Frog Prince in Fairy Tale Theater anybody remember that
no
it was pretty awesome. do you guys remember Fairy Tale Theater with
Shelley
Duvall?
The HBO thing
I think it was on HBO but it was like Shelley Duvall and like each week they would do a different fairy tale with celebrities like Jeff Ooh. Goldblum played the big bad wolf.
No.
And there was an episode, one of the episodes, the Puss in Boots was with, I want to say, Gregory Hines and Ben Holy Vereen. Shit. Yeah, it was really awesome. But Robin Williams was one of my favorite ones, where he's the Frog Prince. And they did totally, like, full on being a frog as Robin Williams. It's awesome.
What'd you say Jerry Reed was in The Survivors? That's all you had to say, dude.
Oh, yeah, Jerry Reed is in it Jerry also. Reed. The Survivors is basically about a bunch of unemployed people. Like, it's Robin Williams loses his job. Walter Matthau runs a gas station and it blows up and they won't give him unemployment because he was the owner. And then Jerry Reed is an out of work hitman who robs a diner where Walter Matthau and Robin Williams are dining and they like foil it on accident. And so the whole movie just is kind of about them constantly running into each other. And it's hilarious. And Robin Williams becomes obsessed with survivalist training. Hmm. But Robin Williams and Walter Matthau, it's like my second favorite Walter Matthau comedy duo.
Really?
Yeah. It's Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau, and then Robin Williams, Walter Matthau.
Ooh.
No Audrey Hepburn? I can't believe you said it's on Hulu?
It is on Hulu.
Damn it, I'm going to go watch that tonight.
It's funny. Like I don't want to give stuff away, but like Robin Williams gets... It's such a weird movie. He gets fired by the owner of the company's parrot. Like the guy trains his parrot to fire everybody. It's great. And it's that whole Robin Williams going back and forth on that line between really, really sad and really, really hilarious, where it's like, it kind of, after what happened, it makes sense how he could just so easily ride that line and just go from one to the other so quickly. And he's so funny as he's just losing it and he's slowly unraveling and just becoming more and more into this idea of getting away from society and being in a militia, basically.
Ooh,
it's funny.
There's a really great, I want to promote this app that's really cool that you type in a movie or an actor and it tells you all, I mean, it's like IMDb, but it tells you where it's playing, where the movie's playing. It's called Fan TV. You punch in all the services you have, so Netflix, Hulu, Vudu, and it literally has everything on there. And then you punch in the movie and it tells you where it's playing and what time it's playing based on your location, so... Check that out if you're ever like, I wonder where this movie's playing. Fan TV. It's an app for the iPhone and I think Android. So,
are they going to sponsor us?
Well, hopefully. So I'm talking about them. So the Survivors, also directed by the guy who did Fletch. I noticed. And I'm a big fan of Fletch. So now I got to watch the Survivors. Great. Kevin, throw us a movie.
Okay, so I guess... When everything went down, the first thing that I watched, which just captures how he can just be a giant child, is Hook.
Ugh. Everyone wants to talk
you
about
know
Hook.
What? Let's I know. Talk about Hook. Here's the thing. So everyone did want to talk about Hook, and I was like, oh, Hook. But you know what? It's fine. It's not Spielberg's best. Even those who love it will agree.
True.
But it's fun. It's weird.
How about instead of concentrating on all the shitty parts of Hook, we can just concentrate about how awesome Robin Williams is in Hook.
Exactly.
Because he's great in it.
That yes. childlike quality that he brings to Peter Panning once he starts to remember who he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is amazing.
It really is. That is a great moment. That's a great turn. It hinges on Julia Roberts, but that's fine.
Well, now we're screwed. We're just talking shit about Julia Roberts.
But like it also, the thing that I do really love about it is it has that weird, like, it's all about a terrible father. like that's what it kind of like his story hinges on, mm-hmm. is him being an absent father.
Yeah.
You know, after abandoning childhood, like, altogether, mm-hmm. even his own children's childhood.
Yeah.
I was noticing that, you know how every actor or every director has like a theme that their career has, you know? Like, Spielberg is clearly like fathers and sons, you know? Like, that's his theme, like E.T. or the world, it all revolves around fathers and sons. And maybe just me, but isn't there like Robin Williams' theme to all his characters or thing he was attracted to, it was loss, like loss of a family member, like go to a hunting, he lost his wife, or longing for a family. It was about either losing a family or longing for it, you know, like what dreams may come. Even like 1 hour photo, and like he longs for a family and stuff.
I think up to a point, but yeah. Once you get into RV.
Well, he longs.
He wants to bring his family closer together.
Closer together.
Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah. Not all of them, but, you know.
That is an important part of a lot of stuff he did, is dealing with loss. But I think also the thing that makes him unique is that every character, like, I don't know how to say it, like, figures out how to deal with it. Like,
yeah.
Uses levity in a really powerful way to deal with something. Uses escape to deal with something, like, whether it's going crazy in The Fisher King or, you know, distraction in Good Morning Vietnam, or like a whole fantasy world in Hook.
Well, like, well, even Hook is about like him, like losing that innocence and that sense of wonder and stuff. It's a Spielberg movie. There's fathers and sons in this.
Mm-hmm.
His kid, Hook's got him. Again, this is not. It's not one of your favorites either, right, Brandon?
No, but I will say it's one of my favorite scores of all time.
John Williams?
Yeah. The music in Hook is all time for John Williams. Maybe second only to Star Wars for me.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's a bold
it's
statement.
It's really good.
It's a good score.
It's really good.
No, Catch Me If You Can?
Catch Me If You Can is good. It's not Hook, though.
What about pre-Spielberg John Williams?
Yeah.
Do you, like, he did a lot of stuff with Altman. He did...
No, get the fuck out of here. No, Hook.
The Long Goodbye is an amazing score.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is. It's not Hook, though.
Yeah. So, Hook.
This is the one that I probably watched the most as a kid.
Yeah.
But it's not my favorite anymore. But, like, when I was a kid, I was all about Hook.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
I hated Rufio. I'm not going to lie.
Well, he's kind of a dick.
Rufio's a dick, but he kind of redeems himself at the end.
Yeah. I wondered if his character.
He supplicates to Robin Williams.
Yeah.
To Peter.
Yeah. But the scenes I do love are the scenes with Dustin Hoffman and Williams. They're fucking good.
You know, they are really good
together.
Yeah. Hoffman and Hoskins also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone is really good in it.
Yeah. I like
it's just a weird story.
Like, it is a weird.
It's just weird.
It's a weird version of Peter Pan. Like, it's a weird, like, half dark version of Peter Pan.
They're eating air.
Well, that's a great scene.
Yeah, they're using their imagination.
Yeah, it's their imagination. I know this is something that would be foreign.
That would be crazy.
I do remember that being one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you saying I don't have an imagination?
Not when it comes to food.
I'm saying you're mad that they're actually not eating handfuls of frosting.
Yeah.
Which is all, that's all they eat from what I remember. Is
yeah, colored
a bunch of frosted
frosting.
Things.
Yeah. That was a pretty crazy scene. But the logic of this, you know, like the 3 years and I don't know.
I love when he's remembering how to fly.
Yeah.
And he has to think of the happy thoughts. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, oh, I'm doing it. And then he like falls and he has to think again. I like that scene a lot too. It's really good. Him just in it. He makes it good.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I will agree that there's nobody that could have played this part other than him. That would have made it watchable for me.
Liam Neeson?
You don't think Liam Neeson
could have given that heart?
I have a specific set of skills.
I'm pretty sure some Lost Boys would have ended up dead.
Flying,
fighting, and crowing. He would have stabbed Rufio. He would have taken his sword and just stabbed
Rufio. Happy thoughts. Think happy thoughts.
Yeah. We're going to Coruscant. But yeah, good movie. Good score.
No, you hate this movie.
You hate this movie. Yeah,
for you guys,
you're just
not for me.
Shitting all over.
You for you
don't
guys.
Like this movie.
Well, everyone seems to like it. I feel like I'm the only one who's so I'm giving you guys your good movie. I don't like it.
Well, see,
everyone seems to like it. Everyone.
I said I liked it when I was a kid. I agree that it's not a great movie.
Yeah, it doesn't hold up for
it
me.
It does
that
not
much.
Hold up.
I don't own it. I don't own it, and I don't want to own it.
But oh, Jesus. But I will say that Robin Williams is fantastic in it.
I still like it.
Yeah.
I loved it as a kid. I will still watch it.
Yep.
And I don't mind.
Yeah, I would probably still watch
I
it.
I think I own it, actually.
Really?
Yep, pretty sure.
You should leave it here and make him think that he has it.
Yep. No.
I'll give it away.
You'll know you'll end up watching it.
I'm pretty sure your fiance has it.
I think we do own it.
She would own this
yeah.
movie.
I'm going to pick...
That means it's yours now, by the way.
Only it's true,
only,
legally.
I only want the special features.
According to the state of California, you own half that DVD.
Well, I just want the second disc with all the special features.
Okay, I guess that's...
Yeah.
The court will accept that.
I'm going to pick a dark one. I'm going to go dark on this one.
Of course.
I'm going to go with 2002's One Hour Photo. I love this movie. I've rewatched it.
It's the anti-Hook.
Yeah, it is.
A guy actively hunting for childhood.
Yeah. Well, he longs a family. He doesn't have a family. He's lonely. He plays a character named Seymour Parrish. It's funny that his last name is Parrish.
Which sounds like something that like Bart would call Mo to like ask who's there. Yeah. Seymour Parrish. But like I'm not quite getting the joke.
Is there a Seymour Parrish here?
But Alan Parrish.
Alan Parrish is from Jumanji.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe these guys are like cousins, you know? One went on to own a shoe factory, one went on to work at a photo booth place. And he works at a Walmart type 1 hour photo center. And he gets to see all these intimate moments from these families' lives, and he longs, you know, to have a family, to be, you know, an uncle, to be a grandfather. And he kind of, like, obsessively gets involved with this family, the Yorkins. It's Michael Vartan playing the dad, Connie Nielsen playing the mom, and they have a son. And so he basically gets to know them by looking, developing their pictures and seeing their lives and their homes. And he gets obsessed over them and, you know, starts gets dark really fast. But in this movie, not only is he walking different, like he's totally different than whatever, anything else he's done. Like his posture, the way he's standing, his look, his hair, they thinned out his hair. They dyed it. It's all white. And he shaved all his body hair off his, like, his arms. So when you see him with short, like, he looks different. He doesn't look like your typical, you know, when you look at Robin Williams. And he's speaking even a little softer. His movements are, like, even in the later movies, like RV and all that stuff, he had a lot of energy. Like, Robin Williams had a lot of energy. And he didn't look like he was 63, by the way. Like, so in this movie, he looks older. He looks, you know, like an older man.
And more worn down,
and it's a creepy movie, and I love it. It's very still.
I know. I was gonna say all those characteristics you described,
yeah,
also exactly match him in another movie that could not be more opposite this. But all of the like physical traits you're describing,
really?
Yes.
Are we gonna get to that?
Oh, we'll get to it.
Okay. And this movie is written and directed by Mark Romanek. He's directed a bunch of music videos. He did Nine Inch Nails, right?
Yep.
He's done a bunch of stuff, a bunch of great like visual stuff. But
he did that Jamiroquai video, right, in the room.
Yes.
Virtual Insanity.
Yeah. He's done a lot of cool stuff. He's a really visual director, but I mean, he's a really great writer because he wrote this. I think he might have written Never Let Me Go.
He directed it.
Yeah.
So good writer, good director, but if you want to be creeped out, it's visually stunning. It's well acted, and it gets really dark. I don't want to spoil anything in the last half of the movie, but it's about obsession, basically. So there you go. I don't know if you're gonna like this, Jenny.
I don't know that I want to watch.
Yeah,
it.
It's not a happy Robin Williams.
I don't want
it. All right, Jenny, give us a movie.
All right, I'm gonna go happier, and I'm gonna go with The Birdcage. Yeah. This was the first movie I watched when the news struck.
It's a good choice.
Yep.
Kind of, you know, like cheers you up a little bit.
This might be, other than kids movies, this is going to be the one that I saw the most.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
growing
this
up.
This is in my top three, not just having watched the most back in the day, but like top three favorites.
Yeah.
But I would always watch this one.
This mm-hmm. might be my favorite thing he was in.
I think it might be mine too.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's really, not only does it hold up, which is kind of rare for comedies, especially comedies that do feel of a specific time in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it does feel, at least as far as the, you know, sexual politics mm-hmm. of, you know, him and Nathan Lane, like it does feel very like mid to late 90s because that was when everything was starting to be kind of, generally people were more okay with the idea of homosexuality, like the AIDS thing was dying down. AIDS thing. And the like the mass hysteria and fear over AIDS was dying down. And the way he played it was like perfectly, god damn it, he was just so good at zeroing in on that thing that wasn't like cliche where it's like a gay man who doesn't act gay. Like he was the straighter of the two, I guess you could say, just because the other one's fucking Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
who's the gayest man in any room he walks into.
Yeah.
But just the way they had their relationship was just so honest and real. Like it works for the movie so well I feel like that's why it holds up so well today.
And he plays Armand Goldman. And that, you know what scene always gets me is that scene where he's teaching them how to be straight, you know?
Yeah.
They're at the restaurant.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Like I could just go to that clip and just play it over and over again. And like him walking, teaching them how to walk like John Wayne. And then the finger, the pinky.
Schmear. Schmear.
I think that's actually my second favorite scene. My first favorite scene is like the trailer moment where he's telling them all the dance moves. But keep it inside.
Fussy, fussy, fussy. Yeah.
And a great, great supporting cast, and it's rewatching again because we rewatched it the day we heard the news. Just how funny Gene Hackman is when he's playing serious. He's still really fucking funny.
Yeah.
Like him like running out the window to avoid all the press and stuff. And
when they're in the car, and the goddamn, it kills me every time when they're in their car driving on the way to Florida, and the news is like talking about the scandal, and they just have that sound clip of like could be heard saying, "Put the money on the dresser, chocolate," and he just turns it off. Like,
and Diane Wiest. She's amazing as good. Gene Hackman's wife, a young Calista Flockhart. Who
and
plays the
Dan,
son?
Dan Futterman.
Who's also apparently he's in whatchamacallit?
Fisher King.
He is. Yeah.
I saw that.
He's
one.
He's one of the guys who beats up Jeff Bridges
in
the beginning, and Robin
now.
Williams comes to save them. Yeah,
I need to rewatch that part.
Hank Azaria.
Yeah, he makes this movie.
Agador Spartacus.
Yeah.
When they never wear the shoes because they make me fall down.
Hello.
I like when they're fitting him for the slacks. And he wants them longer because they're kind of high water. And the tailor just like sags his pants so they're longer. And he's like, "No, take it from the bottom." But yeah, everybody interacting with Robin Williams, like he just kind of, this movie's really funny. It always surprises me that this was Jeff Nichols. I don't know why.
Mike Nichols.
Who's Jeff Nichols? He's the MUD director.
Jeff Nichols would surprise you. Yeah. Mike Nichols should not surprise you at all. He's a very famous comedy director.
Mike Nichols, it did always surprise me that it was Mike Nichols.
Why?
I don't know. He started
his career in comedy.
Well, the funny thing is that when I didn't see this movie till it was on DVD, and then I remember picking up the sleeve and going, "Who the hell directed this?" And I was genuinely surprised. I know he started in comedy, but working my way backwards, I had never, you know, like what I think of Mike Nichols is The Graduate and just a depressing ending.
Sure.
So I didn't expect this.
But like,
you know,
Nichols and May is like for an entire generation. Yeah.
So.
But that scene.
It's a great movie.
He's got a lot of good scenes on benches. But that
he does.
But the scene with him and Nathan Lane, when like Nathan Lane freaks out and goes away, and it's all about where they're going to get buried.
When he takes the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, they have that sweet scene together where, and I, it's weird because this is also the time where, like, you couldn't have them kissing, really. And have people be okay with it.
Yeah.
Or, like, not have it take people out of the movie. I think that's probably different now. It'd be fine. But there's still such a love there that it doesn't matter. Like, you don't notice that, at least watching it now. Then it works 100%. But now, like, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, like, well, it'd be nice if they kissed on the lips. Like, they're supposed to be in love, right? Like, they should be kissing. But there's still, like, so much real emotion.
Yeah, you still don't really notice it. I mean, like, you notice it to a smidge, but there you can just see the love that they have for each other so much that it doesn't really matter. Like, the affection.
Yeah.
The affection
you still feel it all the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good pick. That made me laugh.
It's so good.
You gotta walk like John Wayne.
What
is your... give us another movie.
All right. So I'm going to go with the one that all the things you just described about 1 hour photo, mm-hmm. about how he changed his appearance. Blonde hair. He shaved everything off his arms. You look at his arms. He doesn't have as much hair as he normally does. Speaks a little softer sometimes.
What is it?
Robert Altman's Popeye.
Oh my God.
Well, I thought he didn't shave. I thought one of his problems with this role is that they had to glue the forearms onto his hair.
Yeah, I thought they were just glued on.
Well, but when you see... Okay, here's what I'm getting out of that one. When you see the forearms, they're not as hairy as Robin Williams' arms are.
This is true. True. Because they're prosthetics.
Yes, because they're prosthetics. But I thought I had seen this movie, but I don't think I ever did. When I watched it again last week, I guess it's not again... There's so many things I didn't remember at all. I think I just seen some different scenes and clips.
I watch this movie all the time, and I never understood why. I mean, I started watching it when I was a kid, so I never understood why people hated on it so much. Like, I mean, loved it.
It is weird.
It is a very weird movie. Weird. But
it's like, was on all the time. It's like four or five Popeye cartoons, like, all smashed mm-hmm. together. Because, like,
the boxing scene is amazing.
The boxing scene is amazing. Like, the movie doesn't really pick up until the second hour of the movie, where, like, the actual story of the thing gets put in place. Where Sweet Pea gets kidnapped. But yeah, it's stuff like the boxing scene. It's such a great live-action cartoon.
Yeah.
Like, done really well.
And he's fucking Popeye.
He is so good. Every time the Rita Rudner, like, Popeye delivery of, like, saying something and, like, oh, my God, it's a friend. It's okay. Like, all that things, like, under his breath. Like, I laughed at every single joke. It's all so good. And he is Popeye.
Yeah.
Like, you would never have anyone as good a Popeye as him. And I would never think I would want, like, a Popeye. But there he is. And...
Suck at Dave Coulier.
Did Dave Coulier play Popeye in something?
No, but he would always do Popeye in Full House.
Oh, of course he did. What a heck. But
I'm just kidding. I don't have a problem with Dave Coulier.
Not only that, but it also has amazing music. Harry Nilsson.
Yeah.
It's got really amazing songs.
Like I said, just because I watched it so young, so often, I've always loved it. It's perfect casting. Robin Williams is Popeye.
Shelley Duvall
is Olive Oil. It's perfect.
That perfect moment in Shelley Duvall's career where she had that like super weird beauty. Like, she is. She's weird looking.
Yeah,
but like
she
in
is.
A really like gloriously beautiful way. Mm-hmm. Like you can't take your eyes off of her. And like, I didn't know that He Needs Me song was from Popeye.
Yeah.
Really? The one from Punch Drunk Love?
Yeah, the remix is in Punch Drunk Love, which is still Shelley Duvall.
Yeah.
But it's so amazing. And in the movie, it's that. And then right afterwards, what got me watching it was when Robin Williams died, someone posted the Sweet Pea number, his lullaby song that he's singing to Sweet Pea and like writing a letter. Yeah. And it's really beautiful.
I don't like this movie.
Yeah, I can tell by all the shit you were just doing while I was talking about Popeye. You were trying to swallow the microphone, looking around.
No, here's the thing. There's certain movies that give me like a weird like feeling.
Well, hold
like,
on, time out. First off, it's a musical, so right there.
Yeah. Right there, you're out.
Yeah.
I
do love the Shelley Duvall music number. And here's the thing.
Which gives me the most musical part of the whole movie.
Yeah. It gives me the willies. There's a few movies that just watching it, like the way it was filmed, the cinematography, the music, it just freaks me the F out.
The production design is like 100% spot on. Did you know that whole set was kept up and is a tourist attraction in Malta? Like, you can go into the Popeye set. I had no idea.
I want to go to there.
I know. And it looks amazing. It looks just like it does in the movie. Like, they kept it up 100%.
Where is it at?
It's Malta. In Malta, off the coast of Italy.
Oh, okay. They filmed in Italy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
On the island of Malta.
For this movie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep.
Well, they needed like a, kind of a cove, I guess. Do. You know.
Yeah.
Got it.
But God, the last sequence, like with the octopus,
where he literally turns yellow.
Yeah, where Bluto like is all in yellow, like squirming away. But then it's the joke. Underbar was like, "Oh, it is yellow."
So here's the thing. Okay, it makes me feel. It gives me a weird sensation. Like this and Dumbo and Dumbo. And like Alice in Wonderland and Bambi, there's something about like the music, just a mixture of everything that makes me uneasy. Like,
well, that's weird because those are all animated as opposed to this.
Did
one.
You watch Popeye cartoons when you were a kid?
Yeah, and I love the cartoons.
Okay, then I got nothing.
Love the cartoons.
Yeah, because it is straight up a cartoon.
Yeah.
Like especially the last sequence where Olive Oil is stuck in like the exhaust pipe from the ship, and she's just like screaming like, "Oh, Popeye, Olive Oil!" Like it is straight out of a Popeye cartoon.
Yeah. It's in another,
and it's got the weird Robert Altman like cross, like it's a Robert Altman movie 100%. Yeah, so it's got the weird crosstalk.
Yeah, all the dialogue.
Like in a dinner scene with Popeye.
The wonderful like long zoom shots.
Yeah. Yeah, from like off on the ship, like zooming in on the town, like it's so weird.
See, the more he's talking about it, the more I just want to watch it right now.
I know, it's so good. I had so much fun watching it.
That's on Netflix right now, right?
It is on Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
I haven't watched this movie since it came, like when I was a kid, so I haven't watched this as an adult because I didn't like the feeling.
If you didn't like it as a kid, you're probably gonna hate it even more.
Yeah.
So I kind of just want to go watch it with you and see your reaction, but you have to finish the movie.
Oh no.
The tax collector that was always running around.
Yeah.
Wimpy's there.
Wimpy's awesome.
Wimpy is a character in it. Always wanted his burgers. Oh, so good. When he finds the pipe, he's like, "Oh, it looks just like my pipe."
Like, I haven't rewatched it in a while.
Every time a joke is delivered in that like undertone, it is hilarious.
I don't remember feeling like it was almost 2 hours long, but I just noticed that it is almost 2 hours long.
It is. It's a little over 2 hours, actually.
Really? I thought it was 158. That's what it says on Netflix.
1 hour.
Wow.
1 hour.
Boom.
1 hour, 54 minutes.
There you go.
54 minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I stayed for the credits.
Yeah, and again, this is
included. That doesn't mean anything.
This is on streaming on Netflix. If you
I think
it
is. Is it on Amazon Prime too?
Yes,
okay. It is. Yeah, yeah. All right, Popeye. Adam, what do you got?
Okay. What
do you got?
Screw it. I'm going big. Fucking Good Morning Vietnam.
All right.
Nice.
It's one of my favorites. I think it is
so
my.
Good.
I think it is my favorite.
Yeah.
This is the one that like more than The Birdcage, more than Hook even. I would watch this one all the time. Like, I have the soundtrack still. I love this fucking movie.
Great.
And, like, and the reason I bought the soundtrack is not for the music. I bought it just so I could listen to Robin Williams' little monologues. It's so fucking good. It's just, like, pure. And, like, even though he's playing Adrian Cronauer, it's like, pure Robin Williams just riffing.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
It's amazing.
I'm sure the real Adrian Cronauer was not like Robin Williams on the radio.
That's
what
it's a true story?
Yeah. At least as far as I know, somewhat a true story.
I don't even know.
As far as I think,
it's Robin Williams.
As far as I think, there was a guy named Adrian Cronauer who was brought over to Vietnam because he had a good radio show on
in Crete.
In Crete, yeah, that might be as far as it is a true story. I don't know necessarily. I don't know about all the Saigon stuff if that's really accurate or not.
I love it so much. He is so amazing, and it's also got a great cast. It's not not just him, but like
Forrest Whitaker,
Bruno Kirby.
Bruno Kirby is so good at playing just a straight up dick who thinks he's hilarious.
Robert Wohl, JT Walsh is an awesome hard ass.
Yeah, this is a sad movie now. Bruno Kirby, JT Walsh, and Robin Williams.
Yeah,
all having left us.
Forrest Whitaker
still alive though.
Oh, okay.
Playing garlic.
Richard Edson and Bruno Kirby.
Oh, yeah.
Are a hilarious comedic team. In this movie.
They are
very like Abbott and Costello.
Another guy who always looks the same age, Forrest Whitaker.
I don't know about all that.
I think so. Well, now he's starting to look older, but there was a time where it's like he looked the same age.
He does, yeah.
From like Fast Times to like mid like 90s.
To Ghost Dog.
Even to this is like 10 years.
He's so, but I mean, Williams, this movie, it's like resting on a bed of his words.
When Forrest Whitaker picks him up and they keep seeing, like, he keeps joking that it's the same woman that he's seeing. Like, woman of this stamina. I got to meet up with her. And then he sees another woman at the restaurant, the same thing. He's like, oh, she keeps following me. I can't.
And when he starts teaching the class, the English class.
Oh, yeah.
For the people who haven't seen it, give us a little synopsis of it.
Okay, so Robin Williams is an Air Force. he's in the Air Force and he's a DJ, like that's what he does. And he's brought from Crete to Vietnam to boost morale. But he has an unorthodox way of doing things, which he's kind of always undercutting the commander of the radio station, which is a weird thing to think about. But like, yeah, he's not just the manager of the radio station. He's the commander of the radio station, played by J.T. Walsh. And Robin Williams' unconventional personality and his clash. And it's just him kind of trying to not just boost the morale, but actually tell troops what's happening. And him battling censorship and, you know, fighting the man. Yeah. And it's really funny, though. Funny and sad.
And all, it was all improvised, right?
All of his radio stuff? I don't even know. Honestly, I don't know any of the backstory behind this movie. I just loved it so much. I never really needed to watch any deleted scenes. I can just watch the movie over and over again.
Yeah, this is those ones that the VHS cover will be embedded in my brain forever.
Yeah.
Like at my uncle's house, I can remember pulling it out.
Was this his first nomination as an actor?
That's a good question. No, Garp. I think Garp was.
Yeah. He was nominated for, he actually won a Golden Globe for best comedic performance in a comedy or musical. And then he won a BAFTA. So, good fucking film. It's Barry Levinson, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Barry Levinson.
Who later would bring him on to an episode of Homicide.
And he also did Toys? Is Barry Levinson in Toys?
Barry Levinson did do Toys, which I don't think anyone's going to bring up
yet. No. No, we shouldn't.
I kind of loved Toys when I was a kid.
We shouldn't bring that up, though.
It was a fun movie. LL Cool J.
I will use it to say, if you haven't seen his episode of Homicide, it is unreal.
Homicide: Life in the Streets?
Mm-hmm.
And he's also in Law & Order, wasn't he?
That was SVU like 15 years later.
Yeah.
But this is 1990. This was the first time anyone really had ever seen him do something that was not comedic at all.
Yeah.
There was actually, I'll point people to David Simon's blog, creator of The Wire, one of the writers on Homicide: Life on the Street. He wrote the book on which the movie or the show was based. It was a script they wrote for the first season, but it was too dour because like no one wins.
Yeah.
Like it's too much of a depressing story. So they saved it, and when they got like the second season is like 4 or 6 episodes,
mm-hmm.
they did it in the second season, and the ratings were like through the roof. But David Simon has an amazing entry about working with, like, just meeting Robin Williams on that day that actually anyone who's at all interested should go read.
Nice. And it's a post on somewhere?
It's on davidsimon.com.
Okay.
It's like his blog.
Yeah. Okay. Adam, what do you got?
That was me.
That was you.
That was his first Oscar nomination.
I'm just going to throw out the scene when he was, when Forrest Whitaker's trying to convince him to come back to being on the show. And so all the... He brings them into the middle of all the army. Are they army?
Yeah.
Army guys. And he's just doing his stand-up act in front of them. And he's like bringing them into it. What's your name? Where are you from? And everything like that. And it's so... Yeah.
Like reluctantly, so Forrest Whitaker was like, you know who this is here?
Yeah. That's so Robin Williams. And it was perfect. I love that scene so much.
Making fun of New Jersey and everything.
Like, yeah. And it like hurts like seeing... him have to see them all go off because you don't know how long they're going to be. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, they might not even come back.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really good scene.
It is. That might be the best scene in the movie.
Yeah. Fucking Forrest Whitaker. Kevin, what do you got?
All right, I'm going to go big as well, and I'm just going to bring out Aladdin.
Arabian Nights.
I didn't feel like I needed to rewatch Aladdin because this movie I definitely saw all growing up. This was my Disney movie growing up. You know, like every kid has a Disney movie. This was the one I watched and had everything for. I was Jasmine, everything in Halloween, everything.
I had the little lamp toy that had like the genie that you pulled out.
I had that.
My placemat at the table was a magic carpet. It had like tinsels on it. My placemat.
I had Jafar's like cobra thing that had like light up eyes, like the staff.
Yeah. I loved the parrot, was it?
Iago.
Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
I loved the parrot, man.
I went through and rewatched a bunch of genie scenes, though.
Oh, of course.
Just because I could not. I was like,
this is a movie where I could probably just watch the footage of him recording everything.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the whole movie.
I'll take a moment to say that Spotify needs to get its shit together, because if you go on Spotify and look up Robin Williams and looking to hear some tracks from Aladdin, you're going to see things that are marked Robin Williams Aladdin. But it's not Robin Williams. It's like those bullshit, like, covered like Disney Masterpiece Collection discs, you know, that you find like you'd find like Sam Goody or something like that, and it's they're all marked as Robin Williams, and none of them are Robin Williams.
Oh, that sucks.
It is a bummer.
It is.
And Disney
bummer.
Controls it on YouTube. There are like no clips of Prince Ali or Friend Like Me or anything.
I found a really good Friend Like Me one.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't send me the link, because all the ones I found were really shitty quality ones.
Did you guys ever watch the sequel?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, it was hard to watch, man.
You guys watched the sequel?
I don't think I ever saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? There's three. Robin Williams, and the second one, I thought it wasn't him.
No.
The third one, he comes back.
No, yeah. The second one is Dan, what's his name? Castanella? Yeah, Castanella.
Oh, Homer Simpson.
Homer Simpson's voice. Yeah.
And then the third one, is they made a big deal about, oh, Robin Williams is back, but it's still straight to video.
Yeah.
God, but Aladdin is so good.
Yeah.
I was also bummed because there's the Broadway version of Aladdin now. And the guy who plays the genie is really good, but the arrangement on Prince Ali is shit.
Really?
Yes. In my opinion, it is garbage.
Did you watch the video where they dedicated the song and they got the whole audience to sing
it? It was at the end of a performance and they put in the playbill, like part of the Friend words. Like Me, I think. Yeah, so everyone could sing along with it.
Yeah, it was like right after Robin's death. That was pretty cool.
It was like the day or the day after he passed. Yeah,
it was really good. And that's what I love about New York theater, because the theaters up there are so small and intimate. Even the big Broadway ones, like they're fairly small compared to the ones out here in LA it's like you can do shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can see them from way back there and everyone can be heard.
So the biggest theater in New York is probably small. It's smaller than the Pantages?
No.
Really?
No.
Like the St. James or something? No.
No, but most of the Broadway ones, like when we went to see shows like Memphis, ones that have that won Best Tony.
Yeah.
And everything, they're small. Those theaters are small.
There's a lot of theaters though.
Yeah. Oh,
in and around 42nd Street.
I feel like the one where they play Wicked is probably going to be huge. The one where they play Lion King is probably pretty big.
Yeah. The St. James is the big one. That's like where the producers was and Wicked and stuff like that. I think that might be the biggest.
It's funny if you go to the IMDb page for Aladdin, like seeing the voices and then seeing the characters in your head, like it's so weird. It's like Linda Larkin plays Jasmine. It looks nothing like Jasmine. But yeah, this is a fun movie.
It's so good. He is so good. I can't imagine being an animator. Like, I don't know how much of whatever he had was scripted, because it's all... because all the music is written, like, to him, almost.
Yeah.
Like, every musical number feels like he just came up with it on the fly.
Yeah.
Well, I heard that he didn't want to do it at first until they showed him a clip of the genie doing one of his stand-up acts. And then he got it. And then he was like, I'll do it. That's what I heard somewhere recently, like this past week.
I wonder
week.
If that's available anywhere. That would be amazing
That'd
to see.
That'd be great to see.
Yeah.
Just being really dirty.
Even if it was just like an animatic or something, of the genie doing something from Live at the Met, that would be amazing.
I bet you someone could do it now with like the footage of the genie.
Oh, I'm sure,
You know, like a lip sync type thing.
Even just animating the genie, I'm sure someone could do
it. Good movie, 1992. That was still, were they still
the
doing?
The height of the Disney Renaissance.
Yeah.
Fucking don't say that so bummed.
I'm not a fan of Disney.
He had such a sour face when you said that.
I'm bummed because that was the Renaissance, and it's not going to ever be the same.
I don't think so. Frozen was amazing.
I don't
like it.
Nope.
Oh my God, really? Jenny, you're not with me on this?
It was okay.
Holy shit, I was blown away by how good Frozen was.
You're easily... I
walked into one thinking it would be some dumb shit about a snowman.
That's true.
That's probably why you were blown away.
Got done with it, and it was an amazing musical, and it...
No.
About two women...
I like
Tangled. Who chose each other
Wreck-It
as opposed
Ralph
to some
great.
Stupid man.
Which was?
Wreck-It Ralph was great.
Oh, Wreck-It Ralph was great. Yes.
Wreck-It Ralph was good?
I liked Tangled.
Tangled is
lot.
Good?
Mm.
Oh, those are the two movies before Frozen.
Yeah. Not a fan of Tangled. Or Frozen.
I didn't like Brave, though. Not a fan of Brave.
That's Pixar.
Not a fan.
Is it Pixar? Oh.
Brave? Yeah.
Oh. But was that when they merged?
No.
It was after they merged. Yeah. But they had merged way before that.
Yeah.
And that was famously replaced directors and, yeah.
I mean, okay, same thing.
Where are we at? Where did you leave off?
Aladdin.
You did Aladdin. I was going to go with a dark movie, but I won't. I'm going to go with a light movie first, then a dark movie. I'm going to go with Mrs. Doubtfire.
All right.
I just rewatched it Saturday.
Really?
Yeah. Still really fucking funny. I this is Chris Columbus. Mm-hmm. I celebrate Christopher Columbus Day by watching Christopher Columbus movies. This is one of the movies I watch.
Do you know how many Native Americans Chris Columbus killed?
The director?
I might be getting that mixed up. I'm pretty sure it's a director.
I'm sure it's the same
Italian
number.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Mrs. Doubtfire, Chris Columbus again, director of he's a great writer onto his own. He wrote The Goonies. But anyway,
Gremlins.
Gremlins, yeah. Robin Williams, Sally Field, Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan plays a great straight man.
Can what?
Can play a great straight man.
That's not what he said first.
Can
fuck.
Can fuck.
That is what he said.
I was gonna say effing.
That's what.
First of all, the makeup still kind of holds up.
The makeup totally holds up.
Yeah, yeah. It's still really funny. Again, it's hard to pick a favorite scene. What would you guys say your favorite scene from Mrs. Doubtfire is?
I've always loved the opening. The first,
cartoon.
Yeah. And then him putting words into the bird's mouth. It's or the cat's mouth. Or both. He does both characters, right? It's hilarious. Yeah.
He's like, oh no, you're going to kill me.
No, don't smoke.
Don't smoke. I hated the first time I saw it because I thought it was in the wrong movie. Because I'm like, oh man, am I in an animated movie? What movie is this? And then they pull back because it starts off with animation.
Yeah,
so I thought it was I'd walked into the wrong theater.
That was a big. That used to be a much bigger thing though, and I wish it went back to that. The animated opening titles.
Yeah,
I feel like in the mid '90s,
like City Slickers.
Yeah, Madhouse. Yeah.
Vegas Vacation.
Vegas Vacation. Or Christmas Vegas, Vacation. Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation. Honeymoon in Vegas.
Honeymoon in Vegas. Another one. Yeah, both of them. That used to be a much bigger thing. They don't do that much anymore. Catch Me If You Can.
Rat Race.
Rat Race. There you go. Mm. Shout out to the great Andy Bruckman.
Okay, so I decided that my favorite scene, in this movie, I'm just remembering and I can't get through saying it.
That was a very inside the actor's studio pause. I think my favorite scene.
My favorite scene is at the end when he comes out of the bathroom and it's a really funny scene because he's jumping back and forth between himself and Mrs. Doubtfire when they're
trying to get the makeup back on.
Yeah, when he was
he's got the meeting and the dinner at the same time.
At
Frames or what's the restaurant called?
Couldn't tell you.
it was a real restaurant actually.
Something in San Francisco.
And he's jumping back and forth and he comes back to the table.
To
the wrong table. Well, he comes no. First he comes back to the producer's table and he's got lipstick on that he didn't take off. And he's all, are you wearing lipstick? And he's all, yeah. That's my favorite scene because how he turns it around, you see him quickly thinking, and he's like, yeah, I bumped into an old girlfriend and we're making out. And he's like, you scallywag. And that whole restaurant scene is so funny. Him jumping back and forth.
When he finally sits down in Mrs. Doubtfire's costume or whatever, and he says, I have to piss like a racehorse.
But yeah, and this is just such a great movie. Sally Field is great,
I feel like for me, this is my Hook. Where you, in retrospect, have a problem with Hook, in retrospect, I have a real problem with Mrs. Doubtfire.
What?
Because the subtext is really...
Matthew Lawrence?
The subtext is really gross and horrifying, it's a male justice fantasy where, in any other movie, the courts have determined he's an unfit father. Right?
Yeah.
But no, that bitch is wrong, right? So he's got to dress like a woman and infiltrate his own home to lie to everybody.
This could be...
In order to spend time with his kids. Like, time where he's acting as a whole other person.
The nerve of this guy,
Yeah. It's a horror story. In any other tone, it's horrific.
Wait, so you just really got into that recut trailer, Mrs. Doubtfire, where it's a horror movie?
Well, I haven't seen that. I've seen the Mary Poppins one. Ooh. But the Mary Poppins, I feel like you have to try a lot harder to recut
that.
There's
a recut trailer to Mrs. Doubtfire that's exactly the movie that you're describing.
See, I haven't seen that. But I could imagine how easy that was to do.
Pretty easy, it looks like.
Yeah, because he's really a sick man.
Yeah.
Right? If we're getting down to brass tacks, he's a sick individual
Here's the thing.
Who needs to dress up like a woman.
But she teaches him how to be a better dad.
puppet?
You mean himself?
Yeah.
Yes.
He has to teach himself under the guise of this character. He invents himself.
The character that lives within his
this
brain.
This voice inside his head.
This insane. Be a better dad.
Lunatic.
Yeah.
Who's hijacked his own home?
Yes.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing that the whole movie doesn't really make sense. It's just a fun movie. The thing is.
Oh well, let's rewind this about 30 minutes.
Here's the thing. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about how it doesn't make sense.
It makes total sense.
Wait. He goes to court. He's getting divorced. He goes to court, and they basically what they're proposing is that he doesn't have a job and he's messy. That's it. And they're like, you know what? 1 day a week visitation. That's it.
But that's like, that's my thing. That's totally from the male perspective.
Yeah.
Like, no, the only thing that's wrong with me is I'm messy and I don't care enough.
Yeah.
Like, that's why they're getting divorced.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason they're getting divorced, right?
You like to party.
And in any other thing, we have a court scene where the court determines that he's an unfit father. Yeah. We're like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. Maybe they're better off with the mother for a while.
Yeah.
Until he's really funny.
Yeah.
As this other character.
And humor heals.
And lies to everybody.
Yeah. Except his brother. His brother helps.
I'm just saying, in retrospect, it's a little weird. Oh, yeah. That's my favorite scene when they're doing the makeup and they're singing with him and Harvey Firestein.
I love when he does Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
He's like, I think the nails are too much. the Spanish character. Which is weird because he had already established that he was going to go as Mrs. Doubtfire. So why did he have to do all these characters that weren't... He wasn't going to do.
Because it's Robin Williams.
I guess so.
They were finding her look.
Yeah.
But then every time they did the makeup, he realized it wasn't the right look for the voice. I bought into it.
My other favorite scene is when he gets on the bus.
Oh, you really had a relationship with this movie.
Yeah. When he gets on the bus and the bus driver is like, he looks at her as Mrs. Doubtfire, and his stocking has fallen and his legs are all hairy, and he's like, I like that, you know, all natural, European. This is so creepy. This old bus driver is like ready to hump Mrs. Doubtfire. So, Mrs. Doubtfire, love it. I don't care about the logics of it. It's just funny.
Interesting. And
Pierce Brosnan is really good in this.
He plays a really good like cuckolder.
Yeah,
if that's the right phrase.
But he's not playing a dick in it. Like
no,
he's very like diplomatic about how he plays his part. Like he's just a guy who likes this girl and you know is trying to date her and like. Genuinely, like, there's a scene...
way more handsome and well-off than Robin Williams is.
And there's a scene where they're in the pool, and he talks to his friend, and he's like, oh, I'm like, wild about this woman and the kids, you know, especially the little one. Like, he has, like, genuinely good intentions. And, like, I think that's why that relationship works, because you're not rooting against him. You're just rooting, I like Robin Williams better, because he's creepy and dressed as a woman. But, yeah, Miss Doubtfire, Jenny?
Okay. So, I guess I'll bring us down a little bit.
Bring us down.
Just because I just watched this one, but World's Greatest Dad.
I just watched this one, too.
I really like
today.
This one. For the first time?
Yeah.
I just watched it like 2 days ago for the first time.
Let's start off by saying I love this movie. It's a dark subject,
oh,
and
it's great.
A dark movie, but I love it.
It's really good.
I love Bobcat.
Yeah, he's great.
For those who don't know, he played Bobcat. The writer director of this film is the guy in Police Academy.
Does he hate that? That's
I'm sure
his
he does.
Go-to?
Because I've heard him a lot since.
Yeah,
it's a character he did that he doesn't do anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I just meant the Police Academy thing,
not
the character.
He's indifferent about Police Academy because it gained him a lot of fame. But it gained him a lot of fame in the way of, like, well, at a certain point, he wanted to depart from that character. Mm-hmm. Character.
Yeah. I mean, I've always loved him. Since then, I loved him on that. I loved his voice work
he's
on
always
Unhappily
been
Ever
good.
After.
Yeah.
He played the bunny,
the
right?
Bunny, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And his scene in this movie is my favorite scene.
As the driver?
As the driver.
Are you...
Wait,
on
which
the
one's
show?
You the guest? Which one's the guest?
So, World's Greatest Dad, it's Robin Williams as the father, the single father of a son who's straight up a dick, right? He's an asshole.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting subject, because what if you have a kid and he's just an asshole. That subject's never like been touched a lot in movies. Like, what if you genuinely have
the good son?
Well, the thing is, he's
bad.
We
need to talk about kids. Kevin.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I still have your movie, by the way.
Yeah, see, kids have been assholes, but not for the purpose of the story this movie tells.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they had to make the kid kind of a raging prick.
Yeah, there's been plenty of asshole kids in movies. Yeah. Bad Seed, Children's Hour.
The Omen.
Sid from Toy Story.
But yeah. See, those were just bad. This guy's a dick. Like, it's a totally different ballpark, I feel.
But he's a dick that you still... I never didn't get the sense of, like, well, this kid's having some really heavy teenage years. Like, puberty's hitting this kid hard. Like, I never thought that he was 100% a dick. Like, that there was some part of him that was just like, this is like a weird obsessive phase that he's going through. Like, at least that's what it feels like. I don't know if that's what they... I can assume that's what they meant to do, because you have to have that conflict going forward in the movie when what happens happens.
I didn't realize this kid was the kid from Spy Kids.
Yeah, until
I looked it up later.
Because you can't just be like glad he's dead.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You have to like have the conflict of him being a son. That's why there's that moment after the date where he's kind of like, him and his dad are really buddy buddy.
Yeah. The movie basically is about this man, played by Ron Williams. He plays Lance, and he has a son. He's a single father, and his son's a dick. And his son...
He's really just obsessed with pornography.
Yeah.
And, like, really obscene shit.
Yeah.
Like, German shit.
Yeah.
Asphyxiation.
And...
Like shitting on things.
He accidentally kills himself through autoerotic asphyxiation. Yeah. And it's... I don't want to give too much away, but that's just the beginning of the movie. Basically...
you're not giving anything away.
Yeah.
It says in the synopsis, doesn't it? Like, he...
Yeah, that's the whole catalyst for the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's about how he kind of makes his son look a lot better than what he was and stuff. And
he's a struggling writer.
Yeah.
So he writes his suicide note.
Yeah.
And that sets everything off.
Yeah. Ron Williams is amazing in this.
He's so good.
And actually everybody's great in this. But the subject matter is different. It's dark. So if you're not into dark movies, dark humor, this isn't going to be the one for you. But it's definitely, there's some parts that you're like, man, I can't believe I'm laughing at this, but this is fucking funny as fuck. So, World's Greatest Dad, written and directed by Bobcat
Goldthwait.
Goldthwait.
That's hard. A lot of San Francisco comics make an appearance too. Tom Kenny plays the producer of the show. Shit, I can't remember his name, but he was like,
the guy who does Sinatra?
He was 1,000 voices on King of the Hill. Yeah.
He plays...
Love him too. I can't believe I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I feel shitty.
Yeah, we watch all those Sinatra MTV ads.
Yeah, because he was in Down Periscope.
Yeah, that's right.
As the electrician. That's how I'm figuring out his name right now. I'm Googling Down Periscope.
But he plays that author who's like kind of in love with him in a way.
Toby Huss.
Toby Huss. That's it exactly.
Plays Nitro, but not in.
He's the Wiz on Seinfeld.
Also, the dad from Unhappily Ever After comes out in this. The actor, Jeff Pearson.
Who does he play?
He's the
principal.
The principal.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great actor, too.
Yeah, he is really good. He normally plays like a hard cop.
So, World's Greatest Dad. I like that you brought that up. What did you think of that, Jenny? Was it too dark for you?
It was just a bad time. Like, that couldn't have been a worse movie to watch right
time.
Now.
I watched it for the first time this week also. Worst movie to watch right now.
Yeah.
Like, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched it and you're still upset, don't watch it yet.
Don't watch it.
Wait a bit.
When he walks
in and finds him and, like, breaks down.
Yeah. God, yeah. And it goes, like, you can't hear him anymore.
It's just the music.
It's just the music,
Really great soundtrack, too.
Yeah.
The movie has a really good soundtrack.
What's that guy's name that he really likes? Bruce something?
Bruce Hornsby.
Bruce Hornsby. That's right. Bruce Hornsby makes an appearance.
And he makes the kid hold the microphone for him while he's playing on
the piano. Chris Novoselic cameo just made me think about it a whole different way.
Oh my God, did I miss that? When is Chris Novoselic?
When he's crying in all the porn and the guy comforts
him. Oh, that's right.
That's Chris Novoselic.
That's right.
And then I was just like, oh shit. Like, it made me think, like, I was thinking about Kurt Cobain a lot. I was like, fuck, and my Kurt Cobain shirt. Because all the kids start wearing shirts with pictures of his asshole kid on it. Like, fuck. A whole other level to this movie.
Ugh.
God.
But here's the thing. It's good and it's funny. It's just really dark. So
yeah, I think I watched it at the wrong time. I didn't not like it. I mean, I think it was a good movie, but it just was so hard that I think that made it go down like at least a star to a star and a half.
Yeah,
less
it made
than
it really uncomfortable.
It should have been.
Should have watched it a year ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Bobcat. What were you going to say? Sorry.
I was going to say it's super layered.
Yes.
In the sense of like the way he deals with his son's death and like his son becomes an avatar for everyone, including him, to like be who they wanted to be, kind of.
Yeah.
Or like at least they present him to be like an ideal, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's an amazing song. I don't know who does it, but there's a scene like right after he dies or after he publishes the suicide note or someone publishes it in the school paper. And it's about him being a ghost to everyone. And everyone kind of sees their version of him.
Yeah.
Like it does that montage. Like that's a really beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And it's just really complicated in that way. So it's not, there's a lot of dark humor, but it's like, it's intense.
Deep. Yeah. It's definitely deep.
And Bobcat makes movies that about subjects you always think about, but you never ever voice that thing, that filter in your head that goes, we shouldn't talk about that subject. Like he makes movies about that stuff. He also made, God Bless America, which is really good as well.
Which came out at the exact wrong time.
I know. Like, it's just a combination of bad luck, but he makes great movies. He makes really interesting movies that I really enjoy. I'm waiting for his horror movie.
The Bigfoot one.
Yeah, yeah, that looked good. So, World's Greatest Dad. Where are we at? Brandon?
Me? I'm going to do 1982's The World According to Garp.
Nice. One of the scenes that's been playing on loop since he passed, just in my mind, is the scene where he's explaining a story about the magic gloves.
Yeah.
To Glenn Close. And like just like the joy of telling this story and about how he had to take off the gloves so he could feel love and then he died. Like it seems very fitting in a way. To Williams specifically, I don't know. It's just such a good scene.
And I love that in that scene, the idea is that she doesn't get, like, she read the story, and she doesn't get, she's like, I don't know if I got it.
Yeah, she doesn't understand.
And then he explains it, she's like, if that's what it's about, that's really beautiful.
Yeah, that's what about, I love it. That's what it's about.
Tell us what the movie's about for people who haven't seen it.
Oh, God.
Good luck.
Yeah, it's hard because it really feels like a novel.
Yeah.
Like, it really, I haven't read the novel, but it really does feel like a novel, based on a John Irving novel directed by George Roy Hill. But it's basically about a kid and his mother, played by Glenn Close. She the absence of fathers in a way, but not really. Like she raises him without a father. She's a staunch feminist before that's a thing. That's an important part.
Well, she in the world of the movie, she basically starts feminism.
Right. But before that, like, she is, you could call her a staunch feminist. Like, her son doesn't need a father, you know. She basically, she rapes a GI in order to have him. Like, she was a nurse during the war.
Yeah.
I forgot
about that.
And she even explains in the movie, like, talking about, like, he had an erection one night and I just took advantage. And then she explains that, I think it's to like the dean of the school, of the academy where Garp is going, and he like runs away horrified, like, you raped him? But the way she does it, it's just like, it kind of makes sense in a way. But yeah, and then she ends up, he wants to be a writer, and then she out of nowhere writes a book, like overnight, it seems, called Sexual Suspect, and basically, like you said, invents feminism. And she becomes this like icon that he kind of lives in the shadow of, but ends up marrying a girl that he had met like in high school at the academy. And it's just kind of their life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not strictly about, you could write an essay probably about how it's about feminism, and you could write an essay how it's on an attack on feminism in the same way. That just means it's like, it changes tone like every half an hour in the movie. And, it ends up being it's a lot. It feels big. It's 2 hours, but it's huge.
Yeah.
Like a novel.
Yeah.
And I need to read it.
John Lithgow plays Roberta, a man who used to be, who was undergoing a sex change, but used to be a linebacker for like the Packers or something. I can't remember. Yeah, but he is amazing. He is one of the most like motherly, like warm, affectionate characters like I've ever seen. And so like the scenes between him and Robin Williams where like he kind of becomes the surrogate mother because Glenn Close is living this life being this feminist icon. And like running this house with all of these weird cultish kind of feminist figures.
What are they called?
The Ellen James Society. Yeah. Which is based on
cut out their tongues.
Yeah. A girl who was kidnapped and tongue was cut out. So all these women decide to cut out their tongues like in honor of her, who in the movie is played by Amanda Plummer that he meets later. Another connection.
I remember seeing this as a kid because I went through the George Roy Hill catalog. Sure. I had seen Butch Cassidy and then I did this thing and then I saw this, but it's such
Bonnie and Clyde.
No, that's Walter Hill. No, not Walter Hill.
Arthur Penn.
Penn, yeah. That's right. But I don't remember, I haven't seen this as an adult, so I gotta watch it again.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's heavy though, and it ends on a down note. But it's really good. Got him and John Lithgow especially. Yeah. Like everything between the two of them.
I love the scene again, another one that just I can think about. Not because of what happened, but just one of the things that always makes me laugh to myself just randomly is the one where they chase down the guy who always speeds through the neighborhood.
Yeah, the truck. Yeah. And he loses his shit.
Yeah. And the plane that crashes into the house.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No, it's fine. This plane has been pre-disastered. You know what the chances are of another plane crashing into the house are? It's when they're looking to buy the house and a plane just crashes into it and the guy stumbles out. He's like, you guys okay?
Yeah, no, so much going on.
Pre-disastered.
I don't know if it's streaming for free on Amazon Prime.
But it is not. You have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Though. Okay.
Yeah. What is your pick? We should go one more round.
Okay. One more round. Oh, shit. One more.
Well, until we get to Jenny.
Then if we're doing one more round, back to Jenny, I guess I'm going to go. Well, I think I know what you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
So.
It's a good engine, Will. It's a good engine.
Oh, maybe I don't know what you're going to talk about.
No, okay. I know what you're talking about.
I thought you were going to talk about Cadillac Man.
Oh, I thought, hopefully somebody brings it up.
Okay, well, Cadillac Man. Yes. I mean, just all of them, but Cadillac Man is amazing. The opening of this, something about his openings, where like the opening where he drives past a broken down hearse and tries to sell him a Cadillac, and it just kind of sets up the movie.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if anybody could sell you a Cadillac, Robin Williams could sell you a Cadillac.
Robert Zemeckis?
I want to say that's correct.
I'm so mad. I wanted to rewatch this because I haven't seen it since.
Roger Donaldson.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, director of the worst Bonds.
But yeah, Robin Williams plays a Cadillac salesman who works at a dealership that's being held hostage by Tim Robbins, who is convinced that his wife is sleeping with one of the car salesmen.
Yeah, and he thinks okay, spoiler alert. Well, I guess it's an old movie. But isn't it that he's sleeping with everybody's wife except her, right? Is it me? Is that how it went?
Robin Williams?
Yeah, like he's sleeping with a bunch of girls. But that's the only girl he's not sleeping with, wasn't it?
I think that's one of the jokes.
That's Case, right?
Yeah. And the owner of the Cadillac dealership, who he's trying to get a promotion from, is the one who's actually sleeping with.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
And it's great. And like the whole plot point where they all believe that he's got a bomb strapped to him because he said he bought it in Jersey. it's hilarious.
And this movie, Jenny, I think this movie's fun, lighthearted. You'll definitely like. It's just Tim Robbins and Robin Williams. Tim Robbins plays like the dumbest guy in the world.
Yeah. I love the scene where they're arguing about what his fake name is going to be. He's like, Chuck, like Charlie? No, that's a commie name. Fran Drescher's in it. If that means you don't want to see it, I'm sorry, but
no. This is when she was great.
And Pamela Reed.
Yeah. And Fran Drescher plays his wife. No, that's not his.
She's like the secretary one of the I feel like there's a bunch of secretaries in the car dealership. Annabella Sciorra is the one that plays
his main like side.
Well, that's the I thought that was Tim Robbins. Who plays Tim Robbins' wife?
Oh yeah, that's her. Just great scenes with him too. Like just like how he's like trying to help him so he won't get shot. But also, it's just the dynamics of that movie are pretty amazing. Everybody's amazingly funny in it, and like the Japanese businessman. there's a lot of great scenes. I don't want to spoil this because I think this movie everyone should see. It's really fun. I don't know why I didn't mention it earlier.
I was waiting for you to. I wasn't even ready to talk about it. That's why I can barely like. I just don't have.
I wanted to rewatch it, but it's not available anywhere.
I'll look it up while somebody else brings up another movie.
Like even getting the DVD on Netflix, it's like a save thing. They don't have it available.
Oh wow!
Not so you just have to buy it.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to buy it.
Is Cadillac with one L or two?
One L.
One L.
Two L's. One D. Cadillac. C A D I L L A C.
No, there's one L in Cadillac.
Two.
What? Guys, I just got my mind blown.
yeah, it's only on disc on Netflix. That's the only thing. It's not on HBO. See,
and
not
I wanted
Showtime.
To try and do it. It said save. Yeah. Like it didn't have it available.
There is a DVD for sale on Amazon. That's $287, by the way.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the price of renting it at the video store.
Yeah,
I would have bought that, but I doubt it's on Prime, where I would have got it fast enough. But I'll probably order it.
So order it
because it's $287 plus $6.99 shipping.
Jeez, well, yeah, that's
should
true.
Have Prime. But
yeah,
but
that's what I just said.
But
he has
it's
to
not
see
on,
if it's
Prime.
On Prime.
Oh,
moving on.
Moving on. Kevin, what do you got?
Okay, I'm gonna bring out 2002's Insomnia.
Yeah.
That's what Ricardo was going to say.
No, I was going to say another movie. But
no, I know what I know what movie he's going to bring up.
Someone has to.
There's only one movie.
All right, fine. We get it.
All right. Let's talk about Insomnia. Have you guys all seen it?
I don't think I've seen it all the way through.
I don't think I've seen it.
I have. I mean, I've seen it. It's, I don't know.
I remember
like
getting,
it's good.
It's a remake.
It is a remake.
It's a remake, yeah.
I prefer the original.
I do prefer the original as well.
And like, I don't think Robin Williams is bad. Like, I don't know, the scene with him and
he's barely in it, right?
He's not in it a lot.
No, he's not.
No,
in
no.
A lot.
No, I mean,
the
every scene that
him,
he's in, though,
the scene with him and Pacino, like one of the first ones, like after they're kind of sort of colluding together, is really awesome. But I don't know, there's just Robin Williams is amazing in the movie.
By the way, Paul Dooley, the guy who plays Wimpy, is also in this. I forgot about this.
There's always like one connection to another movie. Yeah.
Nikki Cat is in it. So basically, it's a cat mouse game. This detective is in Alaska, right, Kevin?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's investigating a murder, and he's partnered up with Hilary Swank. By the way, I should say the movie is directed by Christopher Nolan, so it is well directed.
Prepare for zero emotion.
What's the plot?
So Al Pacino is sent to Alaska to investigate this murder
with his partner.
With his partner, and the sun doesn't set. He's there in the part of the year where the sun doesn't set at all, and he can't sleep at all. Like he's having the hardest time.
Which one
sleep.
Can't,
but that's not
Al Pacino
the Al Pacino.
Or? Okay.
Yeah,
it's the only way they'll pay for his police academy.
Is leaving out major things, though. The reason he's sent to Alaska is because he's under investigation for some shady dealings, like where he may or may not have shot someone.
Yeah.
And then, spoiler alert, while they're there, he... Should I say it? Does it give too much away?
It's from 2002.
It happens. It happens.
Okay. Well, the reason why Robin Williams' character is trying to like collude with him to help him get away with murder is because he sees Al Pacino shoot his partner in the fog when they're like trying to hunt down Robin Williams. So Robin Williams is blackmailing Al Pacino to help him get away with murder.
Yeah.
Got it.
Does
Al Pacino know that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They're like in scenes together where they're like trying to talk out how they're going to frame some other kid about killing this girl.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Yeah. This is actually him. He's pretty quiet in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is right on the cusp. It wasn't until...
Well, no. This is after. He's been loud, but like
no,
he tones it down.
I feel like it wasn't until Devil's Advocate.
Devil's Advocate was before this.
Yeah. It was before this?
It was before.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Maura Tierney from ER, is that her name? She comes out and...
News Radio.
Yeah. She has some great scenes with him because she plays the hotel like clerk. And like they have some great scenes where he's talking to her about not being able to sleep. And I think it's a good movie.
It's a solid movie. Yeah. It's decent. I haven't rewatched it in a really long time. I just remember liking the Swedish version.
Yeah.
It's just that Robin Williams, the way he plays the character, it's like he killed the kid in the beginning, and now he's just fucking with Al Pacino.
That's the great part of the movie.
It's a dark turn.
Yeah.
he's not like the likable creepy guy, or he's kind of likable like he is in 1 hour photos. Like, you feel sorry for him. Like, here he's just a bad dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is Christopher Nolan's like first like big like studio movie.
This was like the test to get Batman.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Good pick, man.
Well, who did the original?
It's Jürgen Varnin. All I know is it stars Stellan Skarsgård.
Yes. Ooh. As the cop, right?
Yeah, yeah, he plays the Pacino part.
Yeah.
Ooh. Eric Skoldbarger. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, it's a weird name.
See, that was just as offensive as what I said.
Squigglies.
I was closer. Skoljbjark. Skoljbjark.
Eric was closer.
Eric Skoljbjark.
What are those things called when there's a letter and then it has the two little dots on top?
An umlaut.
Umlaut, yeah. Some dude with an umlaut. Loves
it. There is no umlaut in his name, actually.
Love umlaut. That's racist. My name
there's
had
no umlaut in his name.
Just for fun.
Ricardio.
If I have a kid, I'm going to put an umlaut in their name.
Yeah.
Just to fuck with people. All right.
It goes over a vowel.
Let's talk about the movie I love. I was obsessed with this artist named Elliot Smith. And then I hear a movie comes out and they're using Elliot Smith's music. And I'm like, I must see this movie right away. Take me to this movie. And the movie is Good Will Hunting. And I went to see about them apples and they were delicious.
You got to make it cheesy.
What a weird way to go into Good Will Hunting, Elliot Smith.
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone go into Good Will Hunting because, like, I heard they use a lot of Elliot Smith.
That's what I heard. And
not that, like,
see, I was the opposite.
I don't know. Everyone's saying it's a really great movie.
I went into it for Robin Williams and I discovered that I liked Elliot Smith.
Well, see, I was there and I go, oh, this is a kid from School Ties. I know these guys.
Listen, I hated Rudy, but I was like, these kids have something.
Yeah. So it stars, of course, Matt Damon. If you haven't seen it, where have you been? Are you not from this country? Maybe you are. So I'll tell you the plot the plot to the movie. Basically, it is a poor orphan kid. He's a janitor at Harvard, and
it's not Oliver Twist.
He's a genius, turns out, and he gets in trouble a lot. And the way he gets out of serving time for getting in this fight, he's been in and out of jail for a while. And the way he gets out of it is that they realize that he's a genius, and one of the professors at Harvard realizes that he's a math genius, and he agrees to like mentor him and kind of, you know, teach him stuff, and in exchange for him not going to jail and stuff. And but the deal is he has to see a shrink as part of the deal, and they go to many different shrinks. There's a great scene where there's a scene where he gets hypnotized, and then there's this scene
when he starts singing Afternoon Delay.
Yeah, yeah.
With what's his name?
Yeah,
the reporter who's in movies.
Yeah,
whose name I always forget.
Finally he gets to Ron Williams, who is the last shrink, the at the end of the line before there's nobody left in Boston, and he makes some headway with him, and there's some amazing scenes. Of course, the most famous scene, the one where they're at the park bench, and that scene that monologue's so great.
It's really good, and the way it's filmed is amazing too.
Yeah,
how it like starts on the right side, kind of Robin Williams, and then like pans around him, and then pulls back to see Matt Damon, and like only then do you ever cut to his reaction.
Yeah, yeah. And this is directed by Gus Van Sant, written by one Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
And William Goldman.
No.
That rumor's been
That's what
down.
He says.
No. I've heard William Goldman talk about how
William Goldman
didn't.
Said he hasn't.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Really?
Regardless.
Yeah.
It's MIT, not Harvard.
Yeah. MIT?
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Well, who is more wrong?
They're the same school. Not in L.A.
They're both Boston area colleges.
Yeah.
And Stellan Skarsgård. Not playing a killer
another cop. Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
Wow, is there one... Wait, can we do that? Starting with the beginning of his film career,
I know, right?
Is there one actor that then later sees him in another movie?
I'm sure there is, but there's no time.
Like it.
There's no time for love, Dr. Jones. Let's talk about Good Will Hunting, man.
Can I say that he's only been nominated 3 times for an Oscar, and he's only won once, and it was for this. The three Oscars that he was nominated for was Good Morning Vietnam, Dead Poets Society, Fisher King, and he won for Good Will Hunting.
Well deserved. Well deserved.
I'm just gonna throw that out there because we're on Good Will
Hunting. Yeah, he's amazing in this. Again, the park bench scene, the scene, another one, the scene that kind of gets that did get to me was when he tells him it's not his fault. It's not your fault, Will. And he's like, oh, I know.
Like the ultimate.
Yeah.
Like, the climax of everything. Yeah.
Man. Well, the first scene, their first meeting together, when he like holds him up against the wall.
Yeah.
Like, seeing Robin Williams like that intense. Like,
well, he's so subdued. His character's so subdued. And then bam. Blows up. Yeah.
Well, and the scene when Stellan's, I think, is it the first scene with Stellan Skarsgård where he comes to ask him about it and they're in the bar and they're talking about.
Ted Kaczynski?
And they're talking about the Indian scientist, Dots Not Feathers.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a great scene, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Stellan
Skarsgård
and Robin Williams play old
Peter Sarsgaard, Stellan Skarsgård.
Skarsgård. they play old like schoolmates.
Yeah.
And one of them went. One of them became like a rock star professor, basically.
Won the Fields Medal.
Yeah. And the other one is Robin Williams,
which is like the Nobel Prize of mathematics.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of them, the best way to describe it is one of them wears a scarf while he's teaching.
Yeah. another my favorite scenes is at the end when he's reading the letter that Will left him, that he's going to go see about a girl, and he just says, "Motherfucker stole my line." awesome line. And I in the commentary they say that it was improvised, that he was just supposed to like nod his head and like laugh, and he improvised.
And wasn't the scene about the wife farting in bed improvised?
Yes, because everybody was laughing behind camera because they didn't know it was going to happen. And he says it.
Yeah, I need to rewatch it.
And then when he's talking about the baseball game, and like you see cuts to the game, and you're like, oh, you were there, and he's like, no, he's like, I was at the bar talking to my future wife. He's like, ah, gotta go see about a girl.
So good.
That scene on the bench, though, not to go back to the same thing, but it is so good.
Yeah, where it takes place after the scene where he chokes him out. Cause,
it's well described.
Yeah.
But just, he goes, it's just one thing after another of like, you could tell me all of these things. Like, you could tell me who Michelangelo was, where he was born, where he came from, what he studied, you know, who he was. But you don't know what it's like to look up at the Sistine Chapel. To smell the Sistine Chapel. To see that create. Like, and he just runs through a litany of things like that.
War, just, love.
Oh, it is brutal.
And at the end, he just tells him,
yeah, like, you don't know what it's like to hold your friend's head in your hands as you watch his life fade away. Like,
great speech.
It's a great monologue.
Great monologue.
Yeah.
All-timer.
Gus Van Sant. Just killing it.
But he just, like, he's so effortless in it.
There's only one scene I don't like in this movie, and it's the fake slow motion fight. I don't know why they couldn't afford the film to just do it in slow motion.
Yeah, I don't mind it. Because it's Casey, that shot of Casey Affleck is so amazing with fake slow motion. I don't know.
I'm going to put
wish I had a double.
He's like, just give me my fucking sandwich. I'm going to put your sandwich on my way, just like your mom got her couch. Bring me 10 cents every week. And at the end of the month, I give you your sandwich.
Here's your fucking double burger.
So Good Will Hunting, and then it ends with Elliot Smith. Come on. Awesome. Jenny, you're going to close it out. Give us a good movie.
I did the first one.
Give us a last
movie.
Do
another one?
Close it out.
I wasn't ready.
Let's just keep going. Let's just list them all off. There's so many other good ones we haven't talked about. Let's jump on the bandwagon. Let's just go.
Somebody else.
No one said Club Paradise.
No.
Because that's not one of the good ones.
No.
I mean, it's funny, but.
Let's talk about one good one.
The Awakenings.
And then we'll eventually do a part two to this. No, save the Awakening because that's a good one. That's a juicy one.
Awakenings, not the Awakening. What do you want, Flubber?
Let's talk about Deconstructing Harry or something.
He's barely in that. Well, I don't know.
But he's so. It's
so we're going to just do a part two? A part
two?
I think we should do a part two. Yeah. Okay. I think we're good.
So let's just
put a button on it, on this. We're done.
To be continued.
We did 20, right? Movies?
Yeah.
That's a good bit.
20 movies?
Well, how many times did we do it?
We
went
around four? Or three?
We haven't even talked about television.
We did.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about.
A little bit.
I agree. To be continued.
To be continued.
There's so much more to talk about. Rob Williams is awesome.
We're going to do it again in a year from now. That'll be part two. We'll remember him.
A year from now?
We'll be drinking.
Oh, no. Maybe we just have 15. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We went
out three times?
But yeah, there's so many movies. And then I actually want to see the ones that aren't released yet. I want to see, see what's out.
The next
one
at the museum.
Let's do one when Merry Friggin' Christmas comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. Good idea.
That's,
look at you.
That's his last
with your Warby Parker glasses.
Live action.
All right.
Stay on target.
Sponsor.
Stay on target.
Do you want to piss on all those potential sponsors? It's not like Warby Parker doesn't sponsor a shitload of podcasts.
No, I'm that's why I was brought up.
Stay on target.
Okay. You weirdo.
But that's I think that's his last live action role is Merry Freaking Christmas.
When is that one come? So at Christmas.
At
time?
Christmas, yeah.
Okay. So to be continued in December.
Yeah.
To be continued in December.
The next Night at the Museum comes out around the same time, I think.
Yeah.
Probably yeah.
November, December.
Yeah, one of them.
Yeah, it's one of the big holidays.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it does, yeah.
All right, well, you could find us on Twitter at The Film Podcast. Tweet us any topics you like to talk about, all that stuff. You know, your favorite Robin Williams moment.
Any shit you want to talk.
Yeah, we'll talk back to you.
Yell at us for not talking about the movie we just said we're going to talk about on the To Be Continued episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, get personal. That's fine.
Yeah, who cares? Jenny, where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm at Jenna, J-E-H-N-E-I-G-H.
At B.L. Bennett.
I'm at Ann Adam Scott, A-N underscore Adam Scott.
Kevin doesn't have a Twitter anymore, do
That's
you?
Correct.
Why did you do that for?
Because he's a better man.
And protests about the whole...
I never looked at it, so what was the point of having an account?
Because of Darfur?
Yeah. Fair enough.
It was protests.
All right. Because of Darfur? Darfur. My Twitter is at Ricardo... U-L-T-R-E-R-E-S. It's hard to pronounce my last name. Again, go to the website.
You need an umlaut in there.
And I do need an umlaut. You're right. I will put it there. Until next time, hey, guys, have a good week.